Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles. I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
Well, first of all, stop putting your money in prison. That's the first step you need to take. Stop locking your money away in a 401k at a company employer where you can't access it. Now, if you have your own Roth IRA or IRA, maybe you can do some things with that, but it won't create passive income now unless you're at least 59 and a half years old. So don't put your money in prison. Don't lock it up in equity by trying to pay off your house aggressively because it gets locked up. You can't get it out unless you ask the bank for permission. And right now with interest rates, do you really want to be asking for that kind of permission? So stop that. Stop putting extra money into prison where it gets locked up.
Welcome to Everyone's Talking Money podcast. I'm your host, Shauna Game. There's no judgment, no dumb questions, just smart conversations about you and your money. So come on in and grab a seat. Everyone is welcome here.
Everyone knows that putting money aside in savings is really important. But then what? Should you keep your savings locked in a CD for a higher rate or keep them liquid in a money market? Can your checking account help you save too? Or is it about creating the right combination? We believe real banking is a conversation. Let's talk about the savings options that are right for you. Learn more at sandyspringbank.com. Member FDIC.
Did you know that passive income is one of the best ways to build wealth? It sounds pretty good, but passive income also has some flaws. The problem is, when most people talk about passive income, it isn't actually passive income, like if you bought a business where you actually have to work to make that money. The true definition of passive income is to have money coming in when you aren't working, like when you're sleeping and snuggled in your bed in your comfy PJs. That sounds pretty great to me, but how do you actually build passive income? That's where our guest, Chris Miles, the cash flow expert and anti-financial advisor, comes in. He has used his passive income skills to become financially independent twice and paid off over $1 million in debt after last recession without filing for bankruptcy. In this episode, Chris is sharing how to create multiple streams of passive income on virtually any budget, why traditional financial advice sucks, and why true wealth can't come from a scarcity mindset of saving and only contributing to your retirement accounts, contrary to what the Dave Ramseys of the world spews to millions of people. You won't want to miss Chris's very candid take on this. This episode will have you thinking outside of the box when it comes to building wealth, and as always, take what works for you and leave the rest. Let's start talking. Chris, I am so thrilled to have you join us on the podcast. You were on the podcast, I believe it was last year, and I thoroughly loved the episode. I was so inspired after our conversation, and so I'm excited to have you back on to kind of dig a little bit deeper.
Absolutely, Sean. I'm really excited to be back on. It's such an honor to be here.
We're talking about passive income, which is something that everyone is talking about. Everybody wants to have passive income. And I think there's no better time than right now for everyone listening to kind of figure out this passive income thing, right? Everything is costing more. We have historic inflation. Student loan repayment is starting again. And we're all just trying to live life and spend money, you know, after the pandemic. So we got a lot of interesting things going on. And last time we were on the show, we talked all about creating cash flow. And this time we're looking really directly at passive income, which I know both of those are really correlated, but we're shining the light on passive income. So you're the expert. You know, tell us, how can passive income, how can this really just change our lives?
You know, it's kind of like Warren Buffett says, you know, if you don't make money while you sleep, you're going to work until you die, right? Yeah. And the key with passive income is that it's nice to have that always coming in, be able to have money coming in when you work, when you don't work, you know, and that's the real true definition of passive, right? You know, there's a lot of people out there that'll say things like, well, you know, like I teach passive income, and then maybe they're like real estate investors, but then you dig a little deeper and you find out, no, you're just teaching me how to create a part-time or full-time business. That's not passive at all. You know, and you get some other people say, right. Oh, create passive income. And then it's another, some like online type business or something like that. You know, when I talk about passive income, it's really legitimately passive, meaning that you get your money working for you. In fact, working harder for you. So you have to work so hard for it, right? It's your money is being invested in places. You're not doing the investing in the sense, although you might be partnering with somebody, but somebody else is doing the work. You're just getting paid the returns.
It's interesting because you're a formal financial advisor. We're going to talk about this. I'm a non-practicing certified financial planner. So we have a lot in common there. But as you're talking about this idea of passive income, it makes me think about my dad, who's in his 80s, who has been in the financial industry his whole career, who I would say is pretty old school financial planner, if you will. And, you know, we would drive by, like, let's say a gym together, you know, midday, 12 o'clock. And he'd be like, what are all these people doing at the gym? Shouldn't they be working? And so I'm wondering, you know, for somebody listening right now, because I think there's still that, you know, I don't know, I feel like it's a false money belief that we have to always just be slaving away at our job and earning money that way. And what you're talking about, right, is you're inviting us into, no, there's a different way of doing this.
There really is. Yeah. When you say that, it takes me back. I mean, from his perspective, you know, 20 years ago, I was a financial advisor. And the epiphany for me was when I was sitting down with my dad, you know, we were sitting down at his table. Now he was the one that taught me how to be the nice penny pinching saver in my life, right?
Right. Yes.
You know, hard worker, you know, but he also had scarcity about money. He would say things like, you know, money doesn't grow in trees. You know, what do you think I am made of money? You know, like I can't afford this. And so I would always grow up with that. And I vowed never to become that person. And then I became a financial advisor later in life. And I thought if I can bring back my, you know, give dad his life back, right? To be able to give him some extra time. Cause he literally thought he would work until he died. You know, he could never save.
Oh yeah.
Save
my
enough.
Dad too. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And it was such a miserable existence in a sense. And then, I'm sitting down with him as a financial advisor. He decided to ask me for advice for once. And he was 61 years old. I sat down at his table and I'm looking over his numbers and he says, all right, Chris, what else can I do? You know, and he'd saved in his 401ks. He'd paid off his house early, very proud of that, debt-free, everything that Dave Ramsey would blush and be proud of, right?
And then I looked at him. Can we just pause for a moment and laugh at that?
Yeah. And I said, Dad, listen, if I'm to be blunt, if you didn't have Social Security, you better hope you die in 5 years because that's how much money you have left. Like, that's really all you've been able to save is 5 years worth of expenses. Okay, Chris, that's not what I wanted to hear. I know. Okay, what do I do? I don't know. I don't have an answer for you. And it was a really hard thing to come out of, right? Just to be, and I realized at that point, not only was he not become financially free, even after doing everything right, when I started looking at my own clients, they weren't financially free. Look at all the financial advisors who were supposed to have it figured out like us, right? And we weren't financially free based on just the mutual funds. You know, obviously people would, there's many advisors that might make good money off the assets under management, but if you took that away, they'd be just as broke as anybody else. And that was the big epiphany for me. And that's why I started searching. I'm like, well, how do people do it? You know, like, just like your dad said, wait, how are people even able to do this stuff? And I found people that were retired in their 20s and 30s, financially independent, and they were primarily in the business of like real estate. You know, either they're in business and or they're investing in real estate and things like that, alternative investments, the things that we couldn't offer as financial advisors. And that's the big shift, right? I'll give you an example. I had a client on my show recently, Dan. He came on when he first started with us and he said, yeah, I just retired as being the fourth ranking colonel in the California National Guard. He's like, I got $1 million, got it, you know, but my financial advisor says I'm going to have to live on $30,000 a year because you can only pull off 3%.
Right.
And he's like, that's not a life for me. I don't want that. And that's the accumulation mindset. What had to shift for me when I was a financial advisor to transitioning away from that, as well as for anybody listening to this right now, is you got to transition away from that accumulation, hoarding, saving type of mindset where savers are losers, and instead get into more a cash flow, passive income mindset, which is what Dan had to do. And so with Dan, just to give you an update, after 6 months, I just came back on my show recently and he said, okay, Chris, here's what happened. $1 million. We deployed it. We did some bought some real estate properties that are being managed by somebody else. I put some investment into an apartment deal. I did some investments into like this mineral rights, oil and gas type of investment, but it's land-based, not just drilling-based. And he's like, right now I'm creating $11,000 a month of passive income. He's like, I'm financially independent. And he's like, you know what I'm doing? He's like, I'm doing projects and working as an independent contractor, doing fun stuff. In fact, he did his interview from his job site out in like near Truckee, you know, up there in the mountains and stuff. And he's like, yeah, now I just work by choice. I'm work optional. And I think that's the ultimate goal, is that you can keep working if you want to. That's, in fact, many Americans want to keep doing something that they feel is purposeful or useful, but it doesn't mean that you have to be in a place where you're having to get that paycheck each and every month.
I really like that shift in thinking. I mean, for me, it's very powerful because we're not taught this. Mm-mm. We're taught like put your money in your 401k, get your match, check all those boxes, and then, you know, just wait to the day you retire, start taking some money out. You got a little Social Security and, you know, figure out then what to do with the rest of your life. And I think a lot of the younger generations are like, wait a minute, that is ridiculous. I don't want to live that way, but I don't exactly know what to do to change it. You know, and I really believe your advice that mainstream financial advice, it does suck. It doesn't help you create wealth. That's but true. I want to play a little bit of like devil's advocate here. If we look on the flip side, are there any circumstances where getting financial advice actually does make sense?
Traditional financial advice? You know, to a degree.
Yeah, let's go with that. Yeah.
There, you know, there's the basic stuff. Like, for example, people, you know, often know me as kind of ripping on Dave Ramsey specifically, just because he is one of those financial gurus out there that's the ultimate saver mentality, which is a scarcity mentality. And just so you know, you can't ever be truly financially free having that scarcity mentality. Now, here's what's interesting is I actually recently saw an interview with Dave Ramsey and I'm blanking on the YouTuber's name. He's an influencer out there. But he decided to open his books and let Dave Ramsey look at it and give him advice. And understand that I already knew this going in, but I was surprised that Dave Ramsey was public to even talk about this. Now, see, Dave Ramsey, if you don't know what he teaches about budgeting, saving, paying off all your debt, being debt-free, because, you know, you can't be happy and a Christian if you're not debt-free, which is BS.
Thank you.
All that kind of stuff, right? You know, and there is a half truth to what he says too. I'm not saying it's full BS. I'm just saying it's half BS, you know? But you know, he teaches all this stuff. And again, he's a great guy, very kind-hearted, has blessed so many lives. There's no doubt, especially if you're more like in the remedial financial stage, meaning like, you know, when you go to college and they have like the 101 class, which is the intro class, his advice would be like the 99R. You know, it's like this is the class you got to take just so you can take the intro class, right?
Right.
And so the advice he gives, the basic stuff of, you know, learning how to track your money, learning how to save and start having an emergency fund and things like that is good advice. Even just the having the habit of saving is good advice. That's the part of financial advising I do like. Where it goes wrong is how to create wealth. See, if you're just trying to get the zero, that's one thing. You're just trying to barely make ends meet, that's another. But like Dave Ramsey, what we saw here with this interview is that normally he's telling people, you know, pay off all your debt, you know, sell off everything, you know, or whatever, except for, you know, just have this paid off house and be living on a budget. Well, this guy had millions of dollars. He's worth, I think, roughly about $15 to $20 million. He opens his portfolio. The only bad, you know, the bad criticism that Dave gives, and even it's a little bit tongue in cheek. It wasn't like really outright. It was kind of more passive. But he just said, he's like, yeah, well, you know, the only problem here is you have a few properties that aren't, you know, that aren't debt free. So I can tell which properties you love the most. So that was like his little passive statement, but not the usual, you know, in your face, hellfire and damnation, Dave Ramsey. And what Dave said is this. He said, listen, he's like, I think you should invest in things you love, you know, things that you know a lot about. He's like, for me personally, Dave speaking here, he's like, for me personally, I invest in my business. I invest in real estate. He's like, and then I like mutual funds. He's like, that's what I like. This other guy didn't really do a whole lot with mutual funds. He's like, you know, I have people I know that they don't do mutual funds and that's fine. He's like, I think real estate's great. I think you should do real estate investing. Now notice he's talking to a guy that has more money. The problem is his audience, the people he's meant for, my wife knows because she actually was trained in his facility. She actually was trained there in Tennessee by him and his team, met Dave and everything. She's like, Dave doesn't live by those same rules. He lives by different rules than what he teaches. He lives by the rules right. that we talk about on our show, which is more building your wealth, not gambling it away, which, you know, that's one thing I do disagree. I think mutual funds are a gamble. I think they are mediocre returns with high risks, and I don't think they're worth it. But are they better than doing nothing? Could be, depending if you'd get in the up market or the down market, like right now. But it could be. And so that's the thing with Dave is that he's talking to this guy saying, you know what? Yeah, keep doing this. Business is a great investment. Real estate's a great investment. He should be saying that from day one, in my opinion. But I know his market is for the broke people. The problem is the people that listen to him are the people that already have believed the way that he is taught. He only justifies what they're already doing. They're already savers. They're already putting their money in mutual funds and 401ks. But the truth is that if they want to create real wealth, they can't keep doing that. The 401k won't get you there. You don't hear people that save their way to great wealth in 401ks. And I know I'm rambling here, but you know, I ran into an article I found recently I shared on my podcast where there was four case studies, four people that had saved roughly about $2 million in their retirement plans. Interesting thing, almost every single one of them, none of them were able to save totally in their retirement plans. All of them had pensions or something other kind of bonus that paid out. It wasn't from saving retirement. Even though they would max fund their 401ks and they'd get the matches, they never built up the full $2 million with saving in those mutual funds. So think about this. These are the people that have beyond the median. The median 401k balance is about $80,000 right now. I don't say the average because averages get skewed, but the person, if you take the person right in the middle, has an $80,000 balance in their 401k. If you have to live off 3% of that, that's not even $24,000. That's $2,400 a year you're living on. Even those people with 2 million living on 3%, it's $60,000 a year. And the crazy thing is all four of those people, other than the 84-year-old, he wasn't as bad, but three of the four people were scared of running out of money. The 84-year-old just figured he would die first.
Right.
So if that's evidence, why should we be criticizing this?
Okay, friend, I want to know, what are your money goals this year? Are you saving to buy a house or maybe a wedding or a dream vacation to somewhere tropical? If that's you, please, please take me with you. Or maybe you want to just grow your emergency fund because, let's be real, life is expensive. I want to make sure you reach your goals, so you need Monarch. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. Here's what I love. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard. You can go between light and dark mode. You can create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up all of these automatic rules for your transactions and notifications, and so much more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving their product. Get this. They release updates every 2 weeks, and they even allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. This, my friend, is totally original. Plus, they will never sell your data to third party or show you ads. I think that's really important. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it is the top-rated personal finance app. And now, listeners of this show get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. That's monarchmoney.com/ETM for your extended 30-day free trial. In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, Earnin provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use Earnin in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind." Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in "Talkin' Money" under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin' Money under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank & Trust, member FDIC. The weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited, and it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters, and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince, and I am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless, 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly, ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like $1 million wearing this cozy workout friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/ETM for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/ETM to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/ETM. Yeah. So, I mean, okay, let's get a little like soup to nuts here, because I think everyone listening, they're probably like me, and they're like, okay, how do we do this though? So Let's say we have been putting in money in our 401k, and maybe we have some savings. You know, maybe we've got a small chunk of cash somewhere. How do we take what we've got almost at like any dollar amount and actually turn that into passive income? Like, what should we be investing in, or what should we be looking at?
Well, first of all, stop putting your money in prison. That's the first step you need to take. Stop locking your money away in a 401k at a company employer where you can't access it. Now, if you have your own Roth IRA or IRA, maybe you can do some things with that, but it won't create passive income now unless you're at least 59 and a half years old. So don't put your money in prison. Don't lock it up in equity by trying to pay off your house aggressively because it gets locked up. You can't get it out unless you ask the bank for permission. And right now with interest rates, do you really want to be asking for that kind of permission? So stop that. Stop putting extra money into prison where it gets locked up. Second step is then figure out where can I put my money? Now, if you're just starting out, you're just starting to save, you have 10,000 bucks. Okay, that's your emergency fund, right? Or at least 20, maybe 30 plus thousand dollars should be your emergency fund. Start there. There is a strategy that I teach called infinite banking that can help people build up their cash and do things using whole life insurance instead of just the 0.0% savings account. There are ways to create very low fee life insurance policies that actually allow you to build up your cash faster. And then you can invest with it and double dip, essentially make your money in two places at the same time. But once you start to build up some cash, maybe you got 100 grand, 200 grand or so in savings, then it's a matter of trying to find the right deals. Now that's the tough part. That's why we, even for our clients, when we have them, consulting with us one-on-one, I mean, that's typically what they're looking for. They're looking for some sort of guidance and connections to those deals. And you can find your own. Like for example, a type of investment I think would be, generally speaking, safer for the average person getting started is looking up what are called turnkey real estate companies. Now, I'll just say this.
Okay, tell us more.
I'd say the majority of turnkey real estate companies right now don't have great cash flow currently because of those interest rates, especially if you're trying to buy with a mortgage. Some of them you could buy outright with cash. Better ones usually have at least a 10% cash on cash return, which means if you pay, say, $100,000 for a property, you would be earning $10,000 a year or roughly about $800 a month. To give you a real life example, I just had one show up from one of our providers that his property, it was a property out in Texas, out in Northeast Texas. And this property was $110,000, but the actual value is $120,000. So you buy with $10,000 instant equity. So you have a little bit of safety there. And then the cash flow, even after you pay their property management fees, because they manage the property for you. So to give you an example, to let you know what a turnkey company does, they help you find the property. So you're not just looking on the MLS yourself, trying to find it, find properties on your own. They help you find the property. If you need financing, they help you get financing. And then they help property manage it for you. So they're actually doing the work. You're the one just collecting the checks. They're the ones even finding the renters. They're the ones dealing with any issues that come up. There's big issues, like there's a big maintenance repair cost. They might ask you for permission first before charging you. But for the most part, you're buying these properties that are, if they're done right, freshly renovated. So you're not worrying about repairs right off the bat. And you have a renter in place right off the get-go. So the great thing is this property, $110,000, but you're making $930 a month after paying their property management fees. So you're making this 10% return with CHAZ tax advantages. And that doesn't include anything about appreciation or any other benefits there.
So is real estate still one of the best ways to create passive income? Or is that changing a little bit because of the market conditions we're in right now?
This is where I'm going to paraphrase Robert Kiyosaki, which says there's no risky investments, only risky investors. the problem I see is that most people, when they try to do it, they try to do it on their own off the get-go. They look for a real estate property in their own backyard. And they'll say, how do people make money? Because I live in California and it's really hard to make money. Like my mortgage payment is going to be higher than my rent. And the answer is yes, duh, because nothing in the western half of the United States looks good right now. So there's pockets of the United States that do look better. When I buy properties, I live in Utah. I don't buy anything in Utah. I don't buy it in my backyard because rents just stink in comparison to what I have to pay for the price. So I buy properties like in Alabama, in Tennessee and, Missouri or North Carolina, places like that, places that are really unassuming. And so, yeah, it can be risky if you don't know what you're doing or you're just trying to buy something because you heard real estate was a good deal. This is why Rich Dad Poor Dad can be dangerous, that book, right? By Robert Kiyosaki, because, in that book, people get the conclusion, they say, I should buy real estate. I'm going to go buy real estate. And then they do it, but they do it incorrectly. And that could be the most costliest mistake they ever make. So is it now overall, do I think it's risky? No. But if not done properly, it can actually end up creating a lot of stress for you.
So what is real estate done incorrectly? Is that just buying a property where there's absolutely no return?
Absolutely. It's all about cash flow. Never, ever buy a property based on the potential value it could be, like appreciation or what it could grow to be. That's where most people usually make the mistake, or because they just want that rental property. They think it's cool to get it. But then when they finally do the numbers, they realize they're not making any net profit. So like any business, right? If you think of it from a business perspective, a business is more valuable and happier when it has profit. Even at home, you're happier when you have a lot more income coming in than your expenses, right? No different with real estate. You want to make sure you have extra profit, not just a few bucks. You want to have as much as possible. And that's what that cash on cash return means. It means what's the money you came out of pocket, and what's your net profit coming off of that deal? So if you come out of pocket, say for a down payment on a property of $40,000, you know, I would hope I'm making at least $300 to $400 a month. That's what I hope for. And that's after everything's paid, mortgage payment, if you have a mortgage payment, taxes, insurance, any other fees, property management fees, and everything. Now, if you're managing it yourself, I would say go for at least 1% a month, which would be 12% a year. So if you come out of pocket $40,000, you better be making at least $400-$500 net profit a month if you're trying to manage it yourself. Personally, I think that's crazy, but there are some people that actually like doing it. So that's the key, is that the numbers have to work up front. You got to know up front what the numbers are. And that's why if you find a good turnkey real estate company, and I know we have in our network about six of them, and two of them we're actually referring to right now, while the other four, not so much. If you find a good company, you know, you're going to find better deals, and you're going to know up front what you're going to make. It's not going to be so mysterious. And that's just one type of passive investments.
Yeah, I want to move on and talk about some others. But before we do that, I just have one kind of follow-up question. I'm wondering if, is there ever a point in time, let's say you have these couple properties, one or two properties, is there ever a point in time when you decide to sell these, or is the objective, as long as they're creating passive income, that it's a win?
Ooh, that's a good question. Because there's a thing called return on equity. And all that means is how much equity do you have in the property versus how much is that profit per year? So give you an example. I had a client in California, of course. It's usually the Californians. Whenever somebody on the West Coast, Oregon, Washington, California, they say, hey, I've got property. I say, great, sell it. You don't know the numbers. I'm like, I already know. I already know the numbers. You got, if you have equity, assuming you have equity, that the numbers are going to be better selling that property. So in this case, this guy's case, he had a property that had about $700,000 of equity, but his net profit after he paid his mortgage payment and everything else was $200 a month. Now he had the accumulation mindset focus, right? He was looking at it. Now, at first he thought he was doing fine. He's like, yeah, Chris, I got real estate. I'm good. But then when I looked at it, I said, wait a minute, you're only making $200 a month off this? Well, yeah, it's profitable, but don't worry. In 6 years, I'm going to have this paid off. I'll be debt free and then it'll be $2,200 a month. I said, well, that's fine. But here's the deal. We could sell that property right now, take that $700,000. We can do a tax-free exchange into other properties. And even if we only earned 10% on that, that's $70,000 a year. You're currently making $2,400 a year. Even if you paid off the house eventually, right, and made it debt-free, quote unquote, you're still only cash flowing about $26,000 a year. And that's not for 5 years plus down the road. So why not make $70,000 a year today, where we keep reinvesting that? Eventually, after 5 or 6 years, when you're supposed to be debt-free on the other property, you'll have about $100,000 of passive income coming in instead of $26,000.
And I like those numbers better.
Much better. Now, it's hard for him to wrap his brain around, but that's what I mean by return on equity. If you do the math, $2,400 from $700,000, he was making less. I mean, he was making like 0.3% on his money. So even though he was profitable compared to what he originally bought it for, because it appreciated and it kept growing and he was paying down the mortgage at the same time, or really his renters were paying down the mortgage for him, it got to the point where it just was ridiculous to keep that property.
I'm sorry, but I have the best dog ever. Her name is Winnie Stardust. She is a mini golden mountain doodle, full of life, and I would do just about anything to keep her happy, healthy, and safe. Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. Your pet is part of your family, and you want to do the best for them. But vet bills can really add up. We jokingly keep telling Winnie she needs to get a job to pay for her vet bill. That's why you should check out pet insurance. And with ASPCA Pet Health Insurance, you can focus on the care your pet deserves and cover what matters most. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customized accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping to ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you are least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independent American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer, is not engaged in the business of insurance. I'm going to be real with you. Identity theft is on the rise, and you do not want to wake up one morning and discover that your bank account has been emptied, or you're overdue on credit cards you never even applied for. We talk about this often on the podcast, but you don't realize how much of your information is available to scammers on the internet and how susceptible you and your family are to identity theft and fraud. I know it's scary, but now you can get your data removed with Delete Me. That's why I personally choose Delete Me. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. I just started using Delete Me and I got my regular personalized privacy report. I was shocked what they found and removed. It was pages of information about me that I did not want online. Here's how it works. You sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. I cannot tell you how relieved I felt to have Delete Me. And you know, it's also a great service for your parents or grandparents to help protect them from identity theft. Delete Me is not just a one-time service. Delete Me is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you do not want on the internet. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special price for my listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/etm and use promo code ETM at checkout. The only way you get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/etm and enter code ETM at checkout. joindeleteme.com/etm. Go to joindeleteme.com/etm and use code ETM for 20% off.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about some of these other ways that we could create passive income. Like, what are some of your other clients dipping their toes into?
Yeah, there's several. I mean, there's apartments. You can invest in apartments. Now, the good news, you don't have to buy it yourself. It's not that big of a jump for you. You can actually go in together with other people, which is usually referred to as a syndication. So those syndications, those syndicated deals, is really a business partnership, where everybody pools their money together to buy a specific property, and then you earn the profits from it, the cash flow, the profits, and everything. You're not the one managing it or operating it. Somebody else is doing that, and they're usually taking a certain cut of the returns and or fee to do that, but you get all the profits. So pretty much like you're basically really passive in that sense. You're not doing squat, okay? You're really just putting your money in, and that's it. And so we had one recently. This one was exceptional. One of my contacts had, you know, two separate complexes in Michigan in two different suburbs outside of Detroit. So it was actually a two apartment complex deal. And that one, he was offering what's called a 16% preferred return. Preferred return just means that they pay you a minimum of that return every year, even as it's trying to get profitable. So these people were making 4% a quarter on this, and then any potential profits on the back end as well. That's another example recently that people were jumping all over. Most of the time, usually, you know, those kind of deals, at least 10 or 15% can be pretty typical. Although those preferred returns in many cases with deals I've seen, it might be like 7 or 8% where they pay you a minimum return and then you get any profits on top of it, especially if it sells. So apartments is one. Self-storage units is another. It's not popular yet. Like, I'm not seeing a lot of my contacts in the self-storage space come out with a lot of good deals yet. But I would not be surprised in 2023, we start seeing better deals pop up where they start saying, hey, we got a great opportunity. And many times in the self-storage space, 15 to 20% returns aren't atypical. I mean, that can be common sometimes.
So what might change in 2023 to make this more attractive?
I think just there's a lot of people that, you know, especially in the apartment space, I don't see a whole lot more apartment deals that are good. At least the good deal providers, they're being very strict on making sure that they don't buy deals just because they're trying to invest money, right? They want to buy the right deals. And same thing happened with self-storage. There's a lot of people, especially after 2020, had a lot of influx of cash, started buying up stuff because they said, I heard this is good. Sometimes there's just mom and pop people buying it. You know, people that are like doctors or dentists have no clue what they're doing. And then they buy it. What will happen is because they don't know how to manage it and run it, they won't be seeing the returns and say, you know what, I want to get out from under this thing. Let me sell it.
Okay.
And that becomes the deal for you, right? Or the deal for that operator who then you can invest with. So that's why I'm kind of foreseeing that happening, especially with apartments and self-storage.
What about things like, I've heard a lot of people on social media, so I'll say it with an asterisk mark because I don't know for sure, but maybe you can enlighten us. Like, what about things people call like boring businesses, like car washes and laundromats and even vending machines, things like that.
Yeah. I mean, there's actually, we just had a syndication recently that with one of our providers that had a car wash that was already up and running, operating and everything. And people can pool in money together to go and invest in that. Essentially, that's what you're really doing is those syndications. You have a share ownership, right? Now with businesses, I think it's a definite option. I would still be careful because, you know, there is an element of speculation with business versus buying real estate, right? Now, here's an example of where you can mix the two together. One of our other syndications, the one that was really popular, especially with the guy, Dan, that I just mentioned earlier, he invested in what's referred to as mineral rights. So we have a contact where they actually buy the oil, the land, like in Oklahoma, for example. They'll buy a bunch of land before the oil companies do. But what they'll do is they'll buy the land and then they'll turn around and lease it to the oil companies. And not like the Exxon Mobils where they waste money and they're not very profitable. Like usually the medium-sized companies, they're about $1 billion to $5 billion worth type of companies. They'll lease it to them. So those people are paying them rent for using that land. And the oil companies are also doing their own drilling and everything else. And all the profits they're making from the drilling, also you get a cut on that as well. So you get to double dip a little bit. You get to earn money from the lease, which is the guarantee, and you're getting money from the production. And that's not just oil. That's also natural gas, which is a natural byproduct when you drill oil. So, and that's becoming a big shortage right now, especially with Europe and Russia and everything going on there. You know, natural gas is part of it. Obviously, if they find gold, silver, I mean, that's great. That's a bonus. But generally, they're just really going for the minerals and that kind of thing. So there's money you could be making and really make good money. And I know I'm investing in that same kind of deal as well. And, you know, making roughly about 20% a year on that kind of thing.
Nice. Well, you know, I wanted to ask you, as my husband and I, Jeff, we were like sitting down and kind of thinking about this conversation, and we were having like a larger conversation around generational wealth. We talked to somebody last week for the show, and he was talking about building generational wealth in the African American community. And it's interesting because we come from different perspectives. Mm-hmm. Jeff's family hasn't really created wealth and certainly hasn't created generational wealth. It's just kind of lived by getting by, a paycheck to paycheck kind of thing. And my family is different. My family has done a lot of protection. There's a lot of life insurance and trusts and things like that established, but still hasn't created true generational wealth, like you're saying, buying apartment buildings and, you know, different things that could be passed on that could really turn into assets. And so As we're having this conversation, I'm thinking about everybody listening too that's maybe really excited about this idea, but still kind of stuck in that old frame thinking. And so, you know, I'm wondering, how do we just go about and kind of shift our mindset so that we can open up to the possibility that everything that you're talking about could be possible for all of us listening?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, generational wealth really starts with education, right? It's about how do you create a legacy in your life? And so there's truth in both perspectives. You know, like, you know, I hear a lot of, financial advisors or especially insurance agents, they'll say, oh, well, generational wealth is created from your death benefit, from your life insurance, right? And that goes into your estate plan, that goes into your, you know, like your bank of game, right? Your BOG, you know, or whatever it might be, you know, or your estate plan, you know, and that's fine and dandy. But first and foremost, one, it's got to start with you. You know, you've got to create your own education. You got to create your own wealth first. That's first. Second, you got to start teaching your children what you know. I think it's cool because my wife is, you know, a great example of this. We have a blended family, and between the two of us, we have 8 children. She has 2, wow. I have 6. So it's a pretty crazy Brady Bunch that we've got here. And with her 2 children, she homeschools them and she teaches them. She's like, hey, I'm going to teach you about investing. And so we have a 12-year-old that's, you know, earning money off of oil and gas. You know, she's making money off of that. Her little investments going in to try to make some returns, you know, and she gets excited about it and trying to teach them, you know, not just about investing, but also how to think about money differently. Even with my kids, I never ever say the phrase, we can't afford it, because it's not true. You can afford anything you prioritize, right? So teaching them is first. And then really secondly is ensuring that they can become wise stewards of their money too. So it's not like you just give them a bunch of money, like they're trust fund baby brats, right? We're really trying to help teach them and educate them along the way to do what you do. And if not, do it better. I mean, how many times have I heard people tell us or tell me, or, you know, my clients even say, man, I wish I knew this 20 years ago, you know? And we all say that. Well, you have an advantage. You have children that could be learning this 20 years ago, right? Compared to your age, or 30 years. So I think that's the real secret there is, if you want to create generational wealth, you know, and it's not just, it's one, create it yourself and become a student yourself. And then two, become the teacher next and help pass that on to the next generation and beyond.
I like that. I like that. I like that way of thinking. I think it's just super motivating that so many of the examples you've been given are all things that we can do. Mm-hmm. And I know we touched on this a little bit, and you talked about, like, okay, if you've got, we're just throwing numbers out here on the wall, but let's say you've got, you know, $10,000 to $20,000 or so, like that needs to be your emergency fund, like keep that money. Is there a point where, like, is there a threshold where you're like, okay, now I can start looking into like really creating passive income? Is it $25,000, $50,000, or is it just really dependent on your circumstances?
It's a little of both. I mean, $10,000 to $20,000 is a great place to start. Now, if you do, like I said, like, you know, you're probably not gonna be doing a lot of these investments we're talking about with $10,000 or $20,000. I would recommend, even before you worry about any of that stuff, get at least $100,000 saved up that you can access and use, right? In the meantime, most of the time it's going to be making sure you keep yourself protected by having that emergency fund in place, because you got to expect the best, but prepare for the worst, you know? So have that safety cushion there, but it doesn't mean you have to keep your money sitting in the bank doing nothing. You know, there's things you can do. Like we mentioned, that infinite banking concept, right? That you can do with money and create money with that. There's things like, I mean, even within our academy, we have people that are in that kind of group there, where they might only have a little bit to invest. I mean, there are some investments that take a minimum of $100 or a minimum of $1,000 that you could start doing something with. I know my wife, even with her girls, she had already been saving like this kind of quasi education, you know, college type fund, because she's like, yeah, they could go into college, but they might become entrepreneurs like us. So she's creating this fund and maybe has like, you know, $10,000 in it. Well, cool. We could put it in somewhere where just these smaller investments, maybe making 9% or 10% returns off of that money, you know, and grow it in the meantime. So there's options for everybody. There's always a place to start. The key is, if you're looking to do some of these bigger type of deals, you know, don't even worry about those until you're getting to like your 100,000 plus of savings. If you're in the smaller range, then you'll look at some other smaller strategies. You can just start with very simple strategies to just kind of warm up to it and really learn and educate yourself in the process.
All right, Chris. So 2023, many people have argued it's going to be the biggest new year, new you. So if I'm listening right now and I really want to start creating passive income, can you give us like a pep talk or a few words of wisdom or even a little action list for how we can really get things going?
You know, for 2023, the biggest thing is really, I would be playing some defense, you know, with your money, right? One is I would really start to track your money, really start watching your money, like we talked about in our last episode, right? But really tracking your money, really staying lean and mean. You know, I talk about, I said this in 2020, I'm going to give the same advice for 2023, which is get lean, get liquid, and get out. You know, get lean in the sense of really controlling your expenses. I just met with a couple in their mid-20s yesterday. Blew my mind. She's 25 years old, just married, newly married. They just bought a home in California, well, Mojave Desert, you know, but just bought a home in California. And they've got like almost like over $100,000 they could start saving and investing that they've saved and invested, right?
Wow.
Just incredible. And I even told them, I said, listen, we're going to take you on as clients just because, I mean, you're saving $7,000 a month of their income. You know, they're just keeping lean and mean with their money so that they can put away $7,000 a month, even though they're both employees. They both get killed with taxes more than any of us that are business owners. And I was like, you guys are on an amazing path. You guys could create some quick freedom. So with them, it's like, yeah, they're lean to the point where they're saving $7,000 a month, even though they didn't have enough money usually for us to take them on as clients. We said, hey, listen, with the rate you're saving, we can still create some amazing results for you. Keep it up. Let's keep that momentum going. So get lean. Getting liquid means like don't lock it up in prison, right? And then get out. This could mean that if you've got money that you've already lost maybe 20% plus in the stock market right now, it doesn't mean that you have to cash it out, but maybe you move it into some more conservative accounts just to preserve the principal you have in there. You know, maybe you move it to like a money market account or fund or something like that, just to, because even bonds right now we can't trust, because even some of the bonds have been losing money this year. So things like that, just to really get prepared and then start getting the education. That's why, I mean, not to sound too self-serving, but you know, our Money Ripples podcast, just like your podcast, right? I mean, we're talking money, you know, we're talking and trying to educate you and get you to expand your mind, keep building that education and that knowledge base. And then when you feel ready, great. And then it's time to take action. But sometimes the best action you take right now is just be prepared.
I've really been thinking a lot about this conversation with Chris about how we're all just lulled into this belief that saving money and contributing to our retirement accounts, that's the only way to build wealth. I can tell you after working with a lot of really wealthy people that this is not how they were able to build wealth. And most of those people, they started from scratch. They didn't inherit money. They literally started from ground up. So maybe Chris has you thinking about how you can balance all the stuff you should do, like building a strong emergency fund. And yes, take advantage of your company 401k match because it's free money. But then think outside of the traditional financial advice and ways that you can also build passive income. I don't know about you, but I am pretty excited about this idea. If you want to learn more and connect with Chris, you can find everything, including his podcast, on his website, moneyripples.com. If you enjoyed this episode, you know what to do. Shout it out to someone else who is also interested in building passive income. You can head to the show notes for all the links to our episode guests, as well as the sponsors who make this show possible. I'll see you right back here in a few days for a brand new episode.